All right. Well, this is Future Melbourne Committee meeting number 53 on Tuesday, the 2nd of April 2019, and I'm declaring the meeting open at 5:30 p.m. I welcome councillors, management and members of the public in attendance to the City of Melbourne. Thank you. We respectfully acknowledge the traditional owners of the land, the Boonwurrung and the Woiwurrung Wurundjeri peoples of the Kulin Nation, and pay respects to their elders past and present. For the Kulin Nation, Melbourne has always been an important meeting place for events of social, educational, sporting and cultural significance. Today, we are proud to say that Melbourne is a significant gathering place for all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. I take this opportunity to notify members of the public that this meeting is being streamed live on the City of Melbourne's website. An audio and video recording will also be published on the Council's website by close of business tomorrow. Whilst we try to avoid filming members of the public who attend this meeting, there is a possibility that your image will be inadvertently captured in the live stream and in the video recording. So we're just noting this for you to be aware of that fact, please. The unconfirmed minutes of this meeting will also be available from the City of Melbourne's website as soon as practicable. Should you have any queries relating to the conduct of the meeting, the documentation or the submission process, please speak with a member of our council business team at the end of the meeting. At this point, I request that all mobile phones be turned to silent or turned off, and we keep it that way for the duration of the meeting, please. The agenda comprises three reports from management. No apologies have been received from councillors this evening. Thank you. I advise members of the committee and the public that where the committee makes a decision on the basis of fewer than six members voting in favour of it, the decision may be referred by a councillor to council for decision. Disclosure of conflicts of interest. If any councillor has either a direct or an indirect interest as defined in the Local Government Act 1989 in relation to a matter to be considered by the committee, please disclose the type and nature of your interest prior to consideration of the item. Item three, confirmation of minutes of previous meeting, councillors. I'm calling on a councillor to move a resolution adopting the minutes of open meeting number 52 held on Tuesday, 19 March 2019. Deputy Lord Mayor, thank you. Councillor Riley, thank you for seconding. I put that motion to the vote, councillors. All those in favour, please raise your hands. That's unanimous. I declare that motion carried. Thank you. Matters arising from previous minutes. Councillors, are there any matters arising from our previous minutes that you would like to raise at this point? There are none. Thank you. At this point, I'm going to go through...
Sorry, Lord Mayor, before we continue, can I just raise a procedural issue? I'm just getting some messages from people downstairs saying they're not allowed in because we're too full. Is that the case? Normally, we allow people to congregate in the hall. Can I just clarify, Chair? I'm sorry, I just...
I think we've made some logistical arrangements for people to watch by screen downstairs. But everybody that's listed to speak is here, right? Kate, the only other question to ask is if people have questions at the start or at the end of the meeting, so if you can prioritise them. Thank you. Thanks, Councillor Leppett. Now, at this point, we're going to read through the submissions that have been received this evening and the request to speak for the three items. So if you can bear with me, I'll go through all of those now. The following submissions have been received in accordance with the Council's Meeting Procedures Code in relation to Agenda Item 6.1, which is Ministerial Planning Referral TPM-2018-21. 611 to 669 Elizabeth Street, Melbourne. There's been a request to speak from Robert Puxand from Grey Puxand on behalf of Urbis, and also an item of correspondence received from Andrea Pagliaro from Urbis. In relation to agenda item 6.3, which is Queen Victoria Market Precinct Renewal Program, provision of market infrastructure and car parking, there have been requests to speak from Stanley Arcos, CEO, Queen Victoria Market, Leah Moore, Matthew Vitale, Bruce Pham, Gregory Smith, Paul Ansaldo and Marshall Waters. There have been items of correspondence received from Stanley Arcos, Leah Moore, Matthew Vitale, Bruce Pham, Gregory Smith, Rocco Tripodi, Charles Sorine, Mary Lou Howie, Luke Taylor, George Malonis, Paul Ansaldo, Tim Moore, Miriam Fain and Marshall Waters. I advise submitters that you will be invited to address the committee at the time the relevant agenda item is considered. You will have 3 minutes to address the committee. It is the intention of the committee to adhere to that time frame this evening. To assist you, please refer to the counter on the wall. It counts down. It beeps at the completion of 2 minutes to give you an indication of where you're at in that time, and you have 1 minute then remaining to address the committee. Another beep sounds at the end of your allocated time, and if you could please take your seat at the end of that time, that would be fantastic. All right, we're now moving to public questions. In accordance with the Council's Meeting Procedures Code, as always, a 15-minute period is provided at the start of the meeting and then at the end of the meeting for members to be able to ask questions. Questions should be no longer than 90 seconds in duration, and I remind our guests this evening that this time allocated at the start and the end of the meeting are for questions, not submissions. So if you could please be direct in your questions, that would be fantastic. I'm now going to ask you to please put your hand up if you have a question, and we'll take everybody's name and then we'll ask you one at a time to come to the podium. Chris, you had your hand up earlier, so Chris. Oh, sorry, Chris, and at the time I didn't ask if there was anybody that requested that hadn't, and I was actually surprised that I hadn't seen your name there on item 6.2, and I'm sure councillors would be happy for that to happen. So, Chris, thank you. 6.2, Chris Thrum, which is in relation to our recommendations of Aboriginal Volumes 3, 4 and 5 of the Hoddle Grid Heritage Review. Chris Thrum, thank you. And noted for the chair at that time of the meeting.
Sorry.
That's all right. Good. Thank you. And we have a question. Any other questions? So Carla Williams, please come up to the podium. And Carla, if you don't mind turning the microphone on as well, or Dean. Yep. Carla, thank you.
Great. Thank you. My name is Carla Williams. Just for the record, last week I received official advice from the City of Melbourne's lawyer that the Freckleton report is now complete. My questions are, firstly, who has been given a copy of this report and who has been briefed on the findings?
Carla, thank you for the question, and I'm going to defer to the CEO to answer the question, as I think you're the only one in a position to be able to answer it. Justin, thank you.
Thanks, Lord Mayor. Through you, Lord Mayor, I'm the only one that's been given a copy of that report at the City of Melbourne, and that's the answer.
And what about outside of the City of Melbourne?
In regards to the report we've received, nobody's been provided a copy of the report other than myself.
So Robert Doyle and Kenny Elgates haven't received a draft copy?
Robert Doyle would have been put a report to him by Ian Freckleton as part of the investigation. The report that's been concluded has been provided to the city. I'm the only person who has that report. No councillors have received a briefing on the contents of that report.
City of Melbourne covered Robert Doyle's legal costs up until the Supreme Court injunction. What was the total dollar amount covered by council?
So I don't have that answer. Happy to take that question on notice. The Councillor Doyle's costs were covered under by an insurer. So I think you asked this question a bit previously. So the costs, so any councillor has insurance, and our insurer pays for legal costs. At the time, and I did say this to you previously, at the time Robert Doyle took out an injunction order against the City of Melbourne, all of his costs were his own costs. In terms of the amount, I don't have that amount, I don't know, but I'm happy to take that question on notice.
It was alleged that a councillor or an employee received a confidential payout in relation to a sexual harassment of Robert Doyle. It was reported in The Australian in January. Is there any other member that has received a confidential payment from the City of Melbourne?
Look, not that I'm aware of, and I'm certainly not at liberty to discuss anything to do with the staff member within Ms. Williams.
Whilst Robert Doyle hasn't received the report, and you're the only person member that has the report, I haven't received anything. And as a constituent of this city, of Melbourne City, and a victim of sexual assault by your former Lord Mayor, I believe I have a right to read the report and would like to make a time with you to read that report.
And your question is?
Let's make a time.
I'm going to read a statement too, and I think this has been described to you as well by our solicitors. And that is that the report will be made available once the police, once the police investigation is completed. That process certainly protects you in that if charges are laid against Mr. Doyle, he won't have a basis to apply to stay the proceeding, potentially for a lengthy period. On that basis, the criminal proceedings have been prejudiced by the release of Dr. Freckland's findings. That report will not be made available to anyone until the police. Until the police investigation is concluded.
I hereby state that I am prepared to sign a confidentiality agreement, not discuss reading the findings of this report. I will restate again. I was sexually assaulted by your former Lord Mayor. I'm a victim of sexual assault, and I have a right to read this report. I will sign a confidentiality statement, not disclosing these events and anything and any findings to a third party. This is for my mental state and as a right. Now, I want to read, and I'll conclude on this, and I want a response, and I'm happy for this to continue via Minter Ellison. The cost of speaking up is still too high. Processes have not caught up with our expectations as a society. And this was a quote from our Lord Mayor, Sally Capp. Now, Justin Henney, I want to get on with my life. I want my family to get on with our lives. I want to do this for my life, my employment, my husband's employment. I want to read the statement. Thank you.
And Lord Mayor, I'll just make one final comment, and that is that I understand Ms. Williams' frustration. We want her to be able to read that report also. Everything that the city has done has been to conclude the investigation as quickly as possible. So I just want to, again, for the record, state what has occurred. And that is that an injunction order, a statement was made by Ms. Williams, and the matter was being investigated by an independent investigator, Dr. Ian Freckleton, QC. He was drawing to a close his investigation, and at that point in time he put a set of allegations to Mr. Doyle to respond. Mr. Doyle chose not to respond. And at about the same time, an injunction order was taken out of the Supreme Court. That injunction order was settled before we got to Supreme Court, and it was settled on the basis of that there would be full disclosure of the report when it was concluded. If the city had proceeded to the Supreme Court, there are two outcomes. One outcome we could have lost, and the investigation would never have concluded and drawn to a close. One. Two, if we had been successful, we would have had a ruling in 3 or 4 months' time. If there had been an appeal, it would have taken a further 12 months. Our objective has been to conclude the investigation as quickly as possible. I would like nothing more for Ms. Williams to be able to be provided with a copy of that report, as I'm sure all councillors would. And in due course, Ms. Williams will be provided with a copy of the report. The process from here will be, once I've got confirmation on the status of the police investigation, and when I'm able to, One, I will advise you, Lord Mayor, to call a special council meeting. At that special council meeting, the report will be presented, and we are able as a group of councillors to make a decision to fully release not just the findings but all of that report if you so choose. Ms Williams will be given the opportunity will be presented with that report before it is made public, before it goes anywhere. I absolutely acknowledge that Ms Williams wants closure. I absolutely acknowledge her frustration with the system and the process. I make one final comment, and that is that we too are frustrated by the process. The process doesn't give powers to council to compel. The council has made a submission through the MAV. You have written to the local government minister on two occasions. As late as 2 weeks ago, you met with the local government minister again to request that powers are given under the Local Government Act for an inspector to be able to investigate. So I entirely understand Ms Williams' frustration. I also have advice that says that it has implications in terms of should this report be put into the public domain, it has implications for a trial, for any trial, should that trial proceed. So at a point in time that we can, we will provide a full copy of that report to Ms Williams. I've written to the police to ascertain the status of the investigation. I've written to the Victoria Police again today to request that they expedite their criminal investigation so that the matter can be drawn to a close as soon as possible.
Carla, yeah, I think...
I'll give you an answer.
I think...
I've asked to read it, not you hand it to me. You hold it, I read it, I sign a confidential agreement, I don't discuss it.
Carla, I think that particular matter and your request to do that is going to be more appropriately dealt with party to party and making sure that we've covered all of the appropriate legal issues I can say, one, I really respect the fact that you are here tonight asking us questions. I want to reiterate what our CEO has said and what we've said on a number of occasions, that we really do want to see a conclusion to this matter as expeditiously as possible. We do acknowledge the challenges in the process to date. But we're also very mindful of ensuring that if there are legal proceedings that follow in terms of criminal proceedings, that they're not impacted in any way by our actions. And so in our endeavour to conclude this as quickly as possible, we're also weighing up what is appropriate in the circumstances with particular reference to legal advice, and we'll continue to have this as a top priority in our everyday endeavours to continue to seek an outcome for you. And again, thanks for coming along tonight and raising the issue. All right, that does conclude public questions, and thank you, Justin, for your responses as well. I'm now going to refer the committee to reports from management, and I'm calling on Councillor Rees to assume the role of chair of the meeting in relation to the planning portfolio. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Lord Mayor. We have one item on the planning portfolio this evening, and it's agenda item 6.1, Ministerial Planning Referral TPM 2018-21 for the property 611 to 669 Elizabeth Street, Melbourne. Would councillors like a presentation on this agenda item? No. Okay. Then we do have two submitters, but before we do call on them, I just want to make note of the fact that one of the tenants that is proposed to move into this property is Trinity College, who do have a long term association with the University of Melbourne, so that created a question for Councillor Oak and myself today as to whether there was a conflict of interest. Having investigated that, I understand or know that Trinity College is indeed a separate legal entity to the University of Melbourne, separate financial entity, and so it's our, well, certainly my view that there is no material conflict there. I'll now call on Robert Pooksand and Gray Pooksand on behalf of Urbis, who requested the opportunity to address the committee in relation to this matter, to speak for no more than 3 minutes. Yep, up the front there. So I'm sorry, are you Robert or Gary? Or Gray, sorry. Gray. Oh, from Gray. I apologise.
That's right.
Thanks, Robert. You have 3 minutes.
Thank you. We'll go to the first slide. So this presentation's about the development of the Tower Form and its relationship to the heritage buildings and around it. Here we go. Thank you. And I'm assuming that's a pointer. So, moving to the next slide here. This is the context of the site. The heritage Melville Motors building is here at the bottom of the site, and a later addition is on the right-hand side here. This is the registered heritage building, and this later addition forms part of the heritage context of the overall site. Our development of the tower started by having a look at what development controls there were in relation to height, and then from there we had a look at the approved setbacks relative to the previous proposal, and you can see here that there were setbacks along these two boundaries. This is the Elizabeth Street boundary. And under the previous proposal, it was proposed to provide no setback along the second extension here. Having a look at this further, what we've discussed was, in fact, providing a setback along all of the heritage to provide a better context and better explanation of the existing heritage context of the precinct. And then further to that, We rounded the corners of the tower to reduce its dominance above those heritage buildings, and also make a response relative to the existing curved form of the Melville Motors heritage building as well. In discussions with Heritage Victoria, I suppose their view was that they want to get a better outcome from a heritage perspective than the previous planning permit had achieved. And part of our approach was to, in fact, provide increased setbacks along the Queensbury and Elizabeth Street junction, which meant that we could reconstruct this existing portion of the roofs, and additionally, there was less intrusion into the heritage fabric of the existing building as well. We did a number of designs for the facade, and it was felt that the least intrusive facade design that didn't compete with the existing heritage buildings was the most appropriate response. We went to heritage with this very simple vertical pattern on the facade. They came back and said, look, we'd like you to explore introducing an elegant horizontal band on the tower form that worked with the horizontal form of the existing heritage building, which we've did, and that's formed the final design for the building. And there are some shots here of the proposal. Sorry.
Thank you very much for that.
That concludes my time.
You did very well in the 3 minutes.
Thank you very much.
The okay. City of Melbourne allots to you for these submissions. Are there any questions from councillors? I've got one. So look, the design of the tower that you have landed on is very plain, and I just want to clarify, you arrived at that design through discussions with Heritage Victoria. What was their logic for them coming up with such a plain, such a neutral building design?
We actually started with designs that had greater articulation in the facade design, and In our discussions with Heritage Victoria, their main concern was that the presentation of the existing heritage building shouldn't have to compete with the new building behind it. So, whereas architecturally, sometimes as an architect, you might try and, you know, blend a bit of the heritage with the tower above. Their view was that they didn't want a distraction to the heritage building, particularly its presentation at the corner of Elizabeth and Queensbury Streets. And their response in that context was, we didn't want a competing architecture above the heritage building. And that led to the approach of this design. It's a high quality curtain wall. It'll be a very elegant and high quality tower being proposed with some very simple indents. I suppose you'd say that are creating that idea of horizontality in the building facade, and that was felt by Heritage Victoria to be an appropriate response to the average heritage building.
All right, Robert, thank you very much for that. Any further questions? No. All right, thank you for presenting to us this evening at Melbourne Town Hall. As Chair of Planning, I'm happy to move the motion that is appearing on the screen. It's set out in a... I'll explain this further in a moment, but I'll look for a councillor to second it. Thank you, Councillor Leppett. So this is an amendment which Councillor Leppett and I discussed this afternoon. It hasn't been written into the full recommendation, which runs to some pages, but there's two minor changes to what councillors have been provided. First, around the location of the solar PV panels, and secondly, around the facade strategy and requiring further consultation around the facade strategy with Heritage Victoria and the City of Melbourne. And I'll speak to that a little bit further in a moment, and I believe Councillor Leppett is going to speak to the PV panels. So I'm pleased to be able to move this amended motion this evening. This site in Melbourne is on Elizabeth Street. It's one of the city's grand boulevards, 60-metre boulevards leading into the city. It is a landmark boulevard which is travelled by many, many Melburnians every day. It's covered by Capital City Zone 5. There's a heritage overlay on part of the site, and in fact heritage registration on the Harry Norris building at the front, and there are further design and development overlays over the site. I think the starting point with tonight's discussion is to note that this is a very, what we're considering this evening is a very, very significant improvement on what's been before council before and what was approved by the Planning Minister back in 2017 when there was a development proposal put to us by Toyota. That development was, deficient in several key respects, but nonetheless fell within the planning rules and was approved. So I'm very pleased to be able to commend this new development proposal, which is not actually a student accommodation proposal. City North does not need further student accommodation proposal. There's a tsunami of those that has already been approved by the city. And what this proposal is for education and commercial uses, as well as the retention of a car dealership on the site, something which has been there since 1928. Who would have thought that one day we'd be sitting here in council talking about the historical significance of car dealerships in the city? But indeed, this site, formerly Melford, it's been rocking and rolling there since 1928. And it will continue to be a car dealership, a very futuristic one, I think, under this development proposal. Also, the inclusion of a linkway at the north of the site, which will run between Elizabeth Street and O'Connell Street, will be terrific. We want to see this be a busy hive of activity in this part of the city. And so it is quite a long block running, I think, 400 metres plus from Queensbury Street up to the Haymarket roundabout. And so this linkway will be terrific for connectivity through that part of the city. And that's a new feature, which we very much welcome. I also welcome the fact that this the original application had proposed to demolish not the Harry Norris sort of Art Deco building on the corner of Queensbury Street, but the building next door at 625. That building does have a heritage overlay on it, and I'm pleased to see that under this new proposal that building is going to be retained, which is great for the vista along the street. There is one point that I do want to come to, though, where I do think more work needs to be done, and that goes to the amendment to the motion, which goes to the requirement for further work on the facade strategy in consultation with Heritage Victoria and the City of Melbourne. And I would put it to councillors that Melbourne does not need another featureless glass tower, and yet it seems that's what is before us as a result of the discussions that have occurred between the architects and Heritage Victoria. And I want to stress that this is in no way meant as a criticism of Robert Pooksund or Grey Pooksund. I think you've done some very, very good work, and I do know that you put forward a number of alternative facades, and what we would like to see happen with this alternative motion is that we go back again with the City of Melbourne offices for another discussion with Heritage Victoria about what the facade of this building should look like. In particular, we would like to see a design, and this is all, I should say, contained in the City of Melbourne officers' report, but we would like to see a design that references the rhythm, depth and detail of the Harry Norris building, that Art Deco building on the corner, also references potentially the materials of that building, and we think in that way we'll get a much more interesting development on what is a very highly visible corner of the city. I think for Melbourne, and I say this very clearly to Heritage Victoria, you know, I think we need to set the bar higher than just requiring that heritage buildings have glass boxes built on top of them. I think we can actually do better than that. And so I challenge PDG and Grey Pookson and you, Robert, who are very good architects, and the officers here to work with Heritage Victoria and see if we can come up with a new facade. On that note, I'll hand over to you, Councillor Leppett.
Thanks, Chair. I agree. I especially agree that this is a superior scheme to what we've approved before. I remember when the application under a very different guise came before Council. Of course, the Minister made the decision in the end, but Heritage Victoria had already approved a heritage permit by the time we considered it, and we advised the Minister to approve that scheme. But this is a far superior scheme, and there's so much to love about the application. I'm really delighted with it. Especially the extent of the retention of the heritage fabric, as you've said, Chair. Heritage Victoria has obviously pushed for an even bigger retention of heritage fabric, but the extent of heritage fabric, not only of the State Register building, but also of the building to the north in our own local overlay, is excellent. It's as good as we could expect in a situation like this in a very higher density urban renewal area, so I congratulate the applicant. The two tweaks, as you've said, Chair, the second is an innovative way of trying to deal with the fact that the Heritage Victoria only needed to deal with issuing a heritage permit because part of the site included a building on the Victorian Heritage Register, and yet the way that they've approved that heritage permit requires a particular form above the building. Their concern is the same as ours. How do you distinguish that building from the heritage place to make it clear and legible that these are different places, that it's not trying to imitate, reference yes, but not try and imitate the heritage host. And yet Heritage Victoria doesn't have the same internal referrals process to design experts as we do, and of course different people will come to different conclusions. So I think this is an innovative way of seeing if within the realm of that heritage permit that's already been granted, if the delegate there, if the executive director there even, would agree to tweaks to the facade treatment that wouldn't require another heritage permit to be issued. That's the last thing we'd like to put the applicant through. But where all parties can agree that we've come up with a really, really high quality facade treatment. So it is an extra little step there. The Minister will consider whether or not to apply that extra condition. I very much hope he does. And obviously you've got the commitment from the City of Melbourne that will make that process, unusual though it is, as effortless and efficient as possible. And secondly, I'm delighted that we now have our ESD officers considering internal referrals, and it's making its way up to FMC reports. That's been a little while in the making, but this is the first report after a few of us councillors have suggested for a while that we have an ESD member who internal referrals are made to. There's a full account of that in the internal referral section, and that's been assessed. It is fantastic to see ESD issues be put up in lights like this, rather than just always being taken on trust that an independent ESD report has been issued and it complies with the policy. It's good to see some of that detail come out. Another benefit of having that internal referral process is that between the applicant and our ESD advisor, suggestions have been able to be made, and some of those really cost-effective measures to make sure that this building is energy efficient have been explored through the application process and has been explained in this report as well. So I'm really excited at that procedural issue, but one of the issues that's raised for me here is that one of the suggestions through that ESD internal referral process was for solar panels, photovoltaics. Now, I just want to make sure that wherever those photovoltaics go, that they can be approved through the secondary consent approval process of the Condition 1 plans, so that, you know, let's avoid any future additional planning permits needing to be acquired or amended planning permits or anything like that. I just want to make sure that those solar panels are rolled into the secondary consent process, again, in the interests of efficiency and the best possible energy efficient outcome, not just for the owners, but as a good example for the city. I'm delighted to see ESD taking a front seat at this time.
Thank you, Councillor Leppett, for that contribution. Any speakers against the motion? Any further speakers for the motion? Anybody want to celebrate the ESD report being included? People have fought for that for many years. No? Okay. In that case, I will put the matter to the vote of councillors. All those in favour of the motion, raise your hands. I declare that carried. Declare that carried unanimously. I now call on Councillor Leppett to assume the role of chair of the meeting in relation to the Arts, Culture and Heritage portfolio.
Thank you, Chair. Very collaborative chairing process so far. The item under the Arts, Culture and Heritage portfolio agenda section today is the recommendations of Aboriginal Volumes 3, 4 and 5 of the Hoddlegrid Heritage Review. And I call on Emma Appleton, please, to make a brief presentation to us. Thank you, Emma.
Thank you, Chair. Lord Mayor, Deputy Lord Mayor, councillors, members of the public. We're delighted tonight to bring you the Aboriginal volumes of the Hoddlegrid Heritage Review. Volume 3, Aboriginal Heritage, Volume 4, Aboriginal History, and Volume 5, Pre-Contact Aboriginal Archaeology. Volume 3, Aboriginal Heritage, contains the methodology for the Aboriginal volumes and 14 place research reports. A highly innovative component of this project has been a co-research model where traditional owner groups have selected places of significance to them and collaborated with our heritage consultants, Contexts, to produce place research reports. The model enabled traditional owners to draw on and maintain control of information held by community members. The place research reports were prepared by the three traditional owner groups, with each group preparing approximately a third of the reports, so there are 14. Recommendations for the places are to interpret the places via the Aboriginal Melbourne digital mapping tool and to work with Heritage Victoria and Aboriginal Victoria to get the recognition of Aboriginal values on their respective registers and, in the case of Heritage Victoria, the Victorian Heritage Inventory. As I said, there are 14 places in total. The buildings shown here, many of which are already on the Victorian Heritage Register for other values. What this work is about is enriching our understanding of place and describing why these places are significant for Aboriginal people. The stories in these reports are powerful, some heartbreaking, and many of the stories are not commonly known, and through this work we hope to elevate the Aboriginal histories of these places. Sometimes the stories attached to the places are not necessarily related to the current building on the site, but were locations of significant events which had great significance to Aboriginal people. Each of the co-research places have a different set of recommendations based on the current level of heritage protection and whether the values for the places are attached to the built fabric. A full set of recommendations is included in Attachment 3 to the Future Melbourne Committee report this evening. For all places, we are recommending telling these stories via the digital mapping interface being developed by our colleagues in Aboriginal Melbourne. One of the compelling examples of a co-research place is the former German consulate, which, like many of the places identified, is already on the Victorian Heritage Register. So just a few weeks after Kristallnacht, or the Night of Broken Glass in Nazi Germany in 1938, William Cooper, Aboriginal political rights activist and community leader, led a private protest walking from his home from Footscray to the German consulate to deliver a letter condemning the persecution of the Jewish people. This process, thought to be the only one of its kind, is commemorated at both the Melbourne and Israeli Holocaust Museums, and over 70 trees have been planted in the Forest of Martyrs near Jerusalem in honour of William Cooper. This protest was reenacted in both 2012 and 2018. To Volume 4. Volume 4 thematically explores the Aboriginal history of the Hoddle Grid before and after colonisation. This work will be of use to historians, researchers, students and other interested people, and we recommend publishing it on our website to enable it to be used and the history shared. And finally, Volume 5 analyses the pre-contact Aboriginal archaeology of the Hoddle Grid, incorporating evidence uncovered through archaeological investigations and knowledge of past ground disturbance, resulting in a spatial model that predicts areas of architectural sensitivity. The first recommendation for Volume 5 is to request the submission of a voluntary cultural heritage management plan with high-impact development application within areas identified to be of archaeological sensitivity within the site predictive spatial model. Many landowners already are preparing CHMPs for projects within central Melbourne as a matter of due diligence to avoid significant delays associated with finding Aboriginal artefacts during construction. This recommendation is also consistent with the City of Melbourne's Aboriginal Heritage Action Plan to encourage the provision of voluntary CHMPs for all high-impact development projects. The second recommendation is to continually update the spatial model to reflect recent or new archaeological discoveries. Obviously, central Melbourne is currently undergoing significant change. Information from the CHMPs and other archaeological studies being prepared to support this change would be incorporated to refine the model, thereby testing whether it is an accurate predictor of Aboriginal cultural sensitivity and heritage. The third recommendation seeks to inform permanent applicants on the importance of urban Aboriginal archaeology by developing a brochure and providing it to prospective applicants early in the planning process. Thank you. Any questions?
Any questions for Emma? No, thank you so much, Emma. I call on Chris Thrum to make a presentation. Chris, you've got up to 3 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Rowan Leppett, Lord Mayor, Deputy Lord Mayor, councillors, men and women of the Kulin Nation. I'd like to echo everything that Anna said just then. I think it's very important that we recognise and acknowledge that this is the Kulin Nation, and it has been for thousands and thousands of years. I support the recommendation of this report and the review. I think that it's part of a process that the City of Melbourne has been through with the Reconciliation Action Plan. And I think it's important that the citizens of Melbourne recognise that the City of Melbourne do a lot of work to recognise and acknowledge the importance of Aboriginal culture and heritage. And this is a significant contribution to that continued and sustained effort that the City of Melbourne put in towards the endeavours to acknowledge the Kulin Nation and the tribes of the Kulin Nation. I'd like to also acknowledge the fantastic work that Councillor Nicholas Francis Gilley has put in regards to this area. He's very sincere and earnest in regards to furthering the acknowledgement of Aboriginal culture and heritage. A key point, I think, in terms of the review and the recommendations is the acknowledgement that the tribes of the Kulin Nation have been here for thousands of years, and we should respect and acknowledge that the vision and ambition of the leaders of the tribes are being respected by the City of Melbourne. And so we should be very thankful for the City of Melbourne's approach in regards to this matter. I think it's important too, is like recognising the sacred sites and the heritage values of looking back with the assistance, of course, of the archaeologists from the University of Melbourne and other institutions as well. So in conclusion, I do support the recommendations of this review and the three books as well of the reports. And I thank all the work and the effort that the management and the Office of the City of Melbourne have put in regards to this important matter.
Thank you so much, Chris. Are there any questions for Chris? No. Thanks, Chris. You can take a seat. I'll move the motion as it appears on the screen, and I call on a councillor to second the motion. Thank you, Councillor Frances Gilley. This is a really exciting moment, and I hope everyone's read all 366 pages, and I imagine that's why the gallery is packed tonight. But what we're looking at tonight is something completely new in local government. The way we've asked our wonderful consultants Context, and I thank all of their staff who have put together this amazing work. I think it's an almost all-female team of heritage staff. I think there might be one man on the crew, but anyway, I know a few of them. I think I can see a couple in the room, I'm not sure, but thank you to each and every one of you. The amount of work that has gone into these three volumes, and of course we've dealt with two volumes earlier and we'll come back to volume two and we're yet to deal with volume six. This is a big project, but these three volumes in particular, which explore not just Aboriginal histories, but the way we look at shared heritage and how to accurately reflect that shared heritage in our slightly fragmented heritage statutory framework, where the law kind of takes a rigid approach, where you've got post-contact European heritage on one side, governed by the Heritage Act, and Aboriginal heritage on the other side, governed by the Aboriginal Heritage Act. But what do you do about all of those places that have so many important values that meet so many different cultural values, whether it's European, whether it's Aboriginal, whether it's shared, whatever it happens to be. Heritage is a continually evolving practice, and that exploration into how you properly recognise shared heritage values is something that we've done here, I think, really, really well. It's something that we've done to an extent much more than any other local government certainly tried before. It's a really ambitious project. And again, I'm sure everyone's read every word of the 366 pages. I had a good weekend. So thank you to everyone at Context. Just as big a thanks, though, to the teams working with the Bunurong Foundation, the Bunurong, and also the Wurundjeri Land Council. The research teams working within those three groups have done incredible work. None of these ideas have come from outside of those embryonic ideas, or those first ideas, or ideas that were held within those three groups, or were held by the immense amount of knowledge already held by those three groups. The commitment from those three groups to feed into this process has been absolutely phenomenal. They've been participating in, at times, quite a cumbersome and complicated and legalistic framework. That is their expertise, particularly the Bunurong and the Wurundjeri, as more formal registered Aboriginal parties, though not for areas in the City of Melbourne as yet, and this is their bread and butter. But the amount of work they've done in such a short period of time to co-research the importance of these buildings and these other places with Context, and then later on with our marvellous heritage team here at the City of Melbourne, is absolutely phenomenal. And the stories that are being told through that special, I learnt a lot that I didn't already know and that I'm ashamed to say I didn't already know by reading these reports. And even though I did absolutely none of the work, I'm so proud that I managed to commission the Hoddlegrid Heritage Review as a whole. It had a big focus on making sure that we could get as many buildings in our local heritage overlay as possible. But looking at this shared heritage and Aboriginal heritage is something that has exceeded expectations by a very, very long way. It will, I'm sure, remain the proudest thing that I've managed to champion here on Council, even though I did very little of the actual work. But thank you to everyone involved. The recommendations that come out of this 366-page report aren't actually necessarily that onerous in a statutory sense. All of the buildings and places we're talking about are already on the Victorian Heritage Register, with a couple of exceptions there, and we need to find a way to update those heritage citations, add some new criterion to recognise that it's not just non-Aboriginal cultural issues that make these places significant, but update all of those citations to make sure that Aboriginal histories and Aboriginal stories are properly recognised in law, so that when we talk about protection and when we talk about conservation and when we talk about heritage, we are talking as one. And I think the recommendations are good. If we can get to Heritage Victoria and find a way of updating these citations without going one by one through a complicated applications process to the Heritage Council, that would be amazing. Let's hope we can do that. And of course, all the voluntary cultural heritage management plan recommendations are very good as well. I'm sure there are innovations we can make to help any developer who's applying for a permit within the HODL grid and this study area know where the sensitive areas are and assist them to research up front what those potential areas of sensitivity might be, build a CHMP and make sure that Aboriginal heritage and Aboriginal cultural artefacts, wherever they're found, are properly identified and respected. I could go on forever about this, but I won't. So I'm going to stop there and I'll call on Councillor Francis Gilley to contribute to the debate.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Emma. I think it is an extraordinary piece of work. And so rather than talking about the piece of work, because it is extraordinary, I might just talk about the context, I think, which is that we have in this country somewhere between 60,000 and 120,000 continuous years of a people living on the land. That's the oldest continuous culture in the world. And obviously something that's extraordinary, isn't it? And that now you might be able to better find and touch and understand how that culture was below the concrete that's now often on top of it is going to be really important in us claiming that history and that story. You know, that you might be able to come from overseas. As I learned today, which I didn't know, you can actually walk along the bank of the Yarra and you can look down and you can see some of the rocks that formed the falls that actually separated the saltwater people from the freshwater people. I didn't know that was there, and I've been here 20 years and I learnt it today. You know, there is so much to learn. It is so sad that with such a rich culture, the oldest culture on the planet, that we don't know that so commonly, that we weren't taught that in schools, that we don't have that history as readily as we do, you know, the invasion of this land or the population of this land since that. And so this is part of that redress, and that's really, really important. So I guess what's amazing to me is that while we haven't acknowledged those cultures, the people of the Kulin Nation, the three groups relevant to this land, contribute willingly, voluntarily, to help us better understand that culture. They don't say, what do you mean after 200 years you're interested, get lost. They say, here. This is what we know. This is what we've remembered. You know, I personally tried to learn some of the language, And when Auntie Zita was teaching me, she just, you know, she said, these are the only words I'm going to give you because actually I'm still teaching my grandchildren and I'm still trying to remember them because I only learned them from my grandmother, but I was removed by my mother when I was two. So you have this, that's not a long time ago. That's Auntie Zita sat here in the offices teaching me a language. So to the people that have done this work, you don't just bring some history and a body of work. You are saying sorry. You are repairing damage. You are making real a relationship that we desperately, many of us desperately want to be a living part of the culture of this city. So thank you for that work, all of you.
I should have let you move it, Councillor Francis-Gilley. Any other contributors to the debate? Councillor Oak.
Thank you, Councillor Leppett. I echo all of the wide praise and acknowledgement of this significant piece of work that we're looking at tonight. And I did read and was impressed and hoping that what I'm particularly glad about the recommendation is that we've done this huge piece of work. It's going to be important for so many reasons, and we're going to share this information obviously after final review from the traditional owners, but we're going to put it on our digital mapping tool, use it in the planning space, but share that information widely, which is really, really crucial. But to the point that Councillor Francis-Gilley and I think that Councillor Leppett said, that whilst this information has been provided from the three traditional owner groups, it's been provided in such an amazing way because of the process and because of the people involved. And that co-research model in working with the traditional owner groups from the beginning in obviously such a respectful way allowed such an amazing piece of work to be produced because it was collaborative and from the beginning and throughout. And it's their history, but it's our history. So whilst it's so important that we document what they want to be documented, because so little is, it's important that we as Melburnians understand that Melbourne is an Aboriginal place and we need to be celebrating it as such. And this is one thing that we can do as a City of Melbourne to help in that way. So I'm very proud, like you are, that we've got such an amazing heritage team here at the City of Melbourne and our Aboriginal Melbourne team as well. And through the Aboriginal City portfolio, we did discuss this, and I was glad to hear the presentation from the Aboriginal Melbourne team about how they were endorsing the process. And obviously I'm not speaking on their behalf, and I don't want to, but I was glad to hear it presented from the team as the way that I believe I'm interpreting it. But I am very pleased that we have contributed to the history of Melbourne, but importantly, it isn't just history, it's a living culture, and it's a living history, and it continues, and it will always be Aboriginal land.
Any other contributors to the debate? Lord Mayor.
I agree. What exciting and groundbreaking work, and thank you to everyone involved. An amazing and interesting, fascinating piece of work as well, and really pulling out that record of significant places to our traditional owners and adding so importantly to the story of our nation and our combined history. And I thought, given that we were talking about storytelling, there were so many completely captivating stories in there as well, which are going to be shared. And one that really struck me is that Parliament obviously is the seat of our state government now, but it also holds incredibly important significance to the tribes of the Kulin Nation. What is now Parliament Hill was a ceremonial ground where Kulin Nation tribes would regularly meet over thousands of years, and they would come there to settle differences following times of chaos. And so it's a place that held such deep significance for our Aboriginal people, but now also, of course, is a place that has the same sense of people coming together in times of chaos to work through issues together. It was a place where the tribes met and sought refuge also from rising waters, and where people were saved by Bunjil, the creator spirit. So it actually has reference back to such a significant a part of the creation story and then how our Aboriginal people lived out their lives. And it's these stories that come to life through the work that's been done, and it is groundbreaking because it hasn't been done in a major city anywhere else in Australia, and we should be grateful and acknowledge all of that and very excited about what's been pulled together. Through this heritage review, we're going to be able to formally acknowledge and record the importance of these places to traditional owners and to us and to visitors that come to our city. It's a way that also helps current owners have information, relevant information for them as they look at the way they're using the land now and may use it into the future. And I think that's going to be really important as we shape this city. And finally, just to say that I believe this work really does enhance our city as it grows, because it recognises thousands of years of Aboriginal significance in our modern Melbourne as we move forward. So thank you for all the hard work and congratulations, and I'm looking forward to supporting this motion this evening.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Any other contributors to the debate? Councillor Rees.
Thank you, Councillor Lippitt. Often the reports that we consider here at Council can be quite dry, technical nature, and I take nothing away from the great work done by our statutory planners or our urban design team here. And so while we as councillors pore over them, I wouldn't necessarily commend them to all Melburnians as a compulsory reading. But I've got to say that the brilliant work that has been done in pulling these volumes together is so terrific, such a wonderful exercise in the telling of so many great stories about this city, which are not known, that I really do commend this to all Melburnians as something to read. Just like Councillor Francis Gillie, there's so many things in there that I didn't know. I didn't know about the meeting of Indigenous leader Derrimut with Magistrate Hull here on Swanston Street, or that William Burrock was denied the opportunity to visit his son David at the former Melbourne Hospital, where his son subsequently died. These are really important stories in the history of this city, and they need to be known by Melburnians. And this work that we've done here helps tell that story. The digital record will help tell the story. Putting these things on the Heritage Register will help preserve them for posterity. But most importantly of all, we need to tell each other these stories so that this part of our history is better understood by all Melburnians. Great effort.
Any other contributors to the debate? I'll just close by thanking Tanya and the team. We've gone from a dedicated heritage team of 0 to 4 in 3.5 years because of the sheer amount of work we commission in the heritage space, catching up but also excelling and going well ahead of where local government is at in many ways. I'll now put the motion to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. I declare that carried. Is Councillor Rees voting for or against? 4. I declare it carried unanimously. Thank you. I hand over to the Lord Mayor to chair the next section of the meeting.
Thank you, Councillor Lippitt. Well, there's one report from management this evening for consideration under the Major Projects portfolio, and it's agenda item 6.3, Queen Victoria Market Precinct Renewal Program, Provision of Market Infrastructure and Car Parking. Councillors, I'm actually calling on Rob Adams to give us a presentation this evening. Thanks, Rob.
Thank you, Lord Mayor and councillors. In August, the Future Melbourne Committee resolved to establish a 40-person people's panel to deliberate over the provision of market infrastructure and parking. And in December, it received that report from the People's Panel. Council requested that we progress 7 of the recommendations, many of which reinforced the QVM project master plan, that we analyse 3 recommendations specifically relating to the provision of market infrastructure, and we refer 3 recommendations to QVM Private Limited. investigate the provision of 500 car parking spaces in the precinct and the current at-grade car park to become an open space, and investigate the minority report. I won't go through all of those, Lord Mayor, but one of the People's Panel recommendations has been completed, and that was a review of the infrastructure acquired by the traders, and that has been fed into the work we'll show you tonight. Many of the other recommendations are on track and others are under assessment. The three People's Panel recommendations requested by Council for further analysis were to allow for car parking spaces for vans, buses and large vehicles, develop G-Shed, currently the meat loading bay and recycling facility constructed in the 1980s for various infrastructure improvements, and dedicate recycling facilities at ground floor level and below G-Shed. The minority report also recommended looking further at Queen Street for infrastructure. Two options have emerged from this and from the People's Panel recommendation. Both options propose up to 500 customer car parkings on the southern development site. Both options look at market infrastructure in three locations, G-Shed, Queen Street North and Queen Street South, which is known as the Queen's Corner Building and was part of the master plan in 2015. Option A proposes storage within the fruit and vegetable trader's store. So if that is accepted as an option to pursue, there is 2,200 square metres of storage required at point of sale. And option A is preferred as Council's endorsed way forward and is recommended by management. This is, and I think I need to at this stage say that these should not be taken as detailed designs. We were asked to go and analyse the possibility, and what we will be asking Council, if they approve option A, is that we are allowed to do more detailed design. So at this stage, we were looking at bulk areas and locations and how they could work in terms of the storage required. What you see in option A is, to the north of Queen Street, there would be a 400 square meter basement that would be dropped down, which would be your major waste handling facility. It would take all the normal waste and it would also have a digester for organics. And we are pursuing a zero waste policy at QBM. It would be the first part to be built if this is approved, on the basis that a lot of the storage of waste takes place in G-Shed currently. And on the completion of the northern shed, you would then be able to demolish G-Shed and build basements and above ground within the height limit, which is in that area 7 metres, and allow facilities for both traders and storage for fruit and vegetable. There would be the trader amenities and toilets in that particular area as well. Following that, outside of the heritage areas in Queen Street, currently south of the toilet, for those people who know the area, we would build what is called the Southern Shed. And this would be a combination of basements and above ground, and there is an ability to build up to 13 metres here under the DDO. And this would accommodate storage for QVM in terms of their own logistics, potentially some traders. It would have a loading bay that could operate 24 hours, Queen Victoria Market offices and hospitality and retail in that particular location. The building of these can be sequenced to try and limit the disruption that would occur in the market. Just going back to the requirement that there be 2,200 square metres of point of sale storage, that's mainly for fruit and veg. Many of those stalls already have that type of storage, and we've looked at, obviously, markets around the world where this facility is provided. We've had initial discussions with the National Trust about the ability to produce these both at a low level and at a slightly higher level, and subject to approval this evening, we will continue those discussions with Heritage Victoria. Apologies, did I say the National Trust before? Heritage Victoria. Option B is really an expansion on option A. What it says is that if you've built the basements in those three locations, if in the future, for logistical reasons, you wanted to connect them, you could, in fact, put a tunnel connection between the two and expand the basements to connect up G-Shed and what is underground here. That option was seriously looked at, but at this stage we feel it would be too disruptive to the market. And we also have a number of services that exist in this part of Queen Street which would make it both expensive and difficult to deliver. So those were the two options that were looked at. There were a number of studies undertaken with this, both by SGS looking at the business case in the study here, and by PricewaterhouseCoopers looking at the retail plan and the revenue that could be received from this. We have, as far as possible with these very preliminary designs, had a QS look at the costings of those, and that has allowed us to come forward with this recommendation tonight. The costings at a high level, and they've been done at a more detailed level, but indicate that option A would in fact give a total project cost, and these are gross costs. They don't include the sale of the southern site, which is part of the net cost that council's asked us to operate to. And the other two options obviously are more expensive to the tune of about an extra $20 million. We tonight would be recommending option A as we think it addresses the challenges facing the market. It costs the least to deliver. It can be delivered in stages to minimise disruption in the market. It has no impact on the open air heritage sheds. And when I say that, I mean none of the sheds would be adjusted to accommodate these buildings. That doesn't mean that the permit we received last week for conservation of the sheds won't impact those sheds, and we will commence the maintenance of those in the near future. It has manageable approvals and delivery risks and can be delivered in the time frame of the state government agreement, which goes through to 2026. The next steps, if council should approve this tonight, is to undertake a more detailed design, look at the logistics and costings, and report back to a future meeting in July, August. We will consult with the traders on all aspects of this, but particularly the point of sale storage and traded stalls. Logistics will be a big part of this next part of this study. We've looked at it in a preliminary sense, but we need to refine that. And we'd have to undertake further consultation with key stakeholders. We also, at the same time, will continue to deliver the other 12 of the 13 projects that are in the master plan, and that work is ongoing. Thank you.
Thanks, Rob. Councillors, any questions of Rob while he's at the podium? No? Yes, one? DLM?
Rob, can you just run us through with the project in its entirety, not just the new proposal, what are the Heritage Victoria approvals that we're currently seeking or needing to move forward with
Certainly.
The project?
So part of the original master plan was to get Heritage approval to upgrade all the sheds in terms of their heritage fabric. So we are going through two permits. One we've received, which is to do all the maintenance within these sheds and H&I. And that's mainly around things like columns that have been damaged and wear and tear. And we've now got approval to proceed with that. The approval we're still seeking from Heritage Victoria will be where we have to make structural changes. So given the changing impacts of any structure in the 21st century, particularly the possible uplift on these sheds, we're having to make some structural adjustments to the sheds to make them safe into the future. A lot of that will actually involve putting more weight onto the sheds, and we're looking at doing that through two aspects, solar voltaics, which will speak to the sustainability, and there are already solar panels on many of those sheds, and an insulated corrugated iron sheet that will give better climatic environmental effects underneath the shed. So those are two that we're seeking. We will have to, because G Shed falls within a heritage overlay, get a heritage approval for that. That has already had a permit in the past for the demolition of that building. It is a 1980s building, and Heritage Victoria have indicated to us that they are accepting of the need to demolish that and use that as a logistics centre. We don't think at this stage we will need to get a heritage permit for the Queen's Building. It is outside both the national and the state heritage listings, and therefore would go through the normal process.
Councillors? Rob, thanks for your presentation and answering questions. We now have seven requests to speak. And just to remind our speakers, it's 3 minutes. The countdown clock beeps at two and then again at three. And our first speaker this evening is Stanley Arcos, CEO, Queen Victoria Market. Thank you, Stan.
Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity to address you. And as you know, councillors, my name's Stanley Akos. I'm the CEO of Queen Victoria Market Proprietary Limited. And needless to say, I know, Queen Victoria Market is a much-loved asset and attraction for Victoria. But physical reinvestment and business reinvention is needed to enable the market to have a prosperous future. The dear old Queen, as I call her, not only needs a visual facelift, but dare I say, she also needs significant structural upgrades and some new facilities as well. The board and management of QVM strongly endorses option A that is before you this evening. It is a prudent plan. It appears cost effective and is also, importantly, for the operator of the market, a pragmatic plan in that it will enable us to minimise disruption of market operations while works are hopefully implemented over the next few years. Councillors, we have over 600 businesses that are part of our day market community and an additional 100 plus that are part of our increasing night markets community. That's over 700 businesses serving over 9 million patrons per year. It is a big and diverse market community. The QVM team and I know the market. We live and breathe it, and many of my staff are in the room this evening. And we take actions on behalf of the entire market community for the common good of the market. Councillors, our market desperately, and I stress desperately, needs better loading, better logistics to improve safety and to reduce operating costs. It needs better amenities and public areas for customers. It needs better, and in some cases, separate amenities for our traders. It needs better facilities to support the operation of successful businesses, and I particularly point out notions of storage, etc. It needs better waste management facilities to bring us out from the dark ages. It needs better connection, water, etc. It needs better areas for customer respite and casual hospitality. And we also need a fair and reasonable number of market-dedicated car parks for the economic viability of the market. And to leverage from these physical upgrades, the market business itself needs to evolve, adapt and seize new market opportunities to better meet the demands of not only our existing traders, but also for a new generation of traders that we need to bring through and today's sport for choice customers. Councillors, I make note there are four large supermarkets under construction within a 20-minute stroll of the market. No change at QVM is not an option. Nostalgia alone, longing for the glory days, is not the basis of a forward-thinking strategy. The board and management of QVM believe that option A will provide the basis for us to go forward. It is a good plan. Finally, and most importantly, on behalf of the QVM team, and particularly our 700-plus trader community, councillors, we respectfully seek confidence, decisiveness and speed in implementation going forward. As traders say to me each and every day, and there are many traders in the room, please, in the nicest possible way, let's get on with it. Uncertainty and indecisiveness continue to contribute to our physical and commercial decline. There is a keenness among our market community for action and prompt progress. Thank you, councillors.
Thank you,
Sorry, Stan. I went over time.
Not at all. Well done. Always hard to get into the 3 minutes. Thank you, Stan. We're now going to invite Leah Moore up to present. And Leah, I think I calculated 17 extra seconds that Stan had, so that's an indulgence that everyone can expect on the basis of fairness this evening.
Thank you for that 17 extra seconds, Stan. Lord Mayor, councillors, thank you for allowing me to speak. My name is Leah Moore and I'm a second generation trader selling Australian opals and sterling silver jewellery at the market for the last 30 years. I'm currently on the Traders Representative Committee, so as you can see, I'm very passionate about the market, and that's why I'm here to speak on the latest round of renewal proposals. In the last 7 years, $20 million plus has been wasted to the detriment of the market and its storeholders and the public. Until we have upper management and a council that don't bully the traders, scratch certain traders' backs and know how a market works, and better still have worked in a traditional market, I'm afraid there will be no market. The City of Melbourne and Queen Victoria Market Management have a duty of care to the traders to provide a viable workplace. At the moment, the City of, and as well as the City of Melbourne, having an obligation to the community to maintain the market and its traditions of 140 years. Since the current CEO started in the market just over a year ago, we have lost over 100 traders, with no sign of any traditional traders coming in or any of it retained current traders. At the start of the redevelopment talk, we had 743 traders. Now we're down to 560. This is actually written down. Unless something is drastically done, it'll be a very small market with no diversity, full of souvenir stalls, T-shirt stalls and a deli and meat hall. Can I ask you all what you think, what your interpretation of a market is? People come to the market to shop, not to have a picnic. If you base the market on this and the current proposals, it will make the market unattainable for storeholders. It needs to be easy for shoppers and the hospitality industry to come in and grab their produce. Why then are you moving the current car park from where it is and making it hard for the customers and the producers to come and drop off their stuff? Every other large major shopping precinct is increasing their car parking. You're taking a car parking away. Sorry. Moving car parking from Queen Street will kill off this side of the market, as it will make the fresh produce sellers' lives a lot harder, with restricted loading and unloading times and areas. This leads on to many operational issues and the lack of a retail strategy. We can't see the proof that you want all the current traders to stay at the market, so unless there is a concerted effort on the MCC, Melbourne City Council's, and the market management's behalf, to work with a cross-section of all storeholders that represent the interests of all storeholders, there is a very great risk the market will be reduced to a mere fraction of what it is today, if it remains at all. It'd be an embarrassment to the City of Melbourne and the Queen Victoria Management to see a World Heritage market reduced to a state where it's no longer viable for the day trader to continue operating. Thank you.
Thank you, Leah, and perfectly timed as well. Bonus points. Thank you. So I now ask Matthew Vitale to come and join us at the podium. I hope I said your last name correctly, Matthew. Good. Thank you.
Thank you, Lord Mayor and councillors. My name's Matthew Vitale. I've been a seasonal food trader at several summer and winter night markets. My father, Joe Vitale, has also been a trader at the Queen Vic Market for many years as an operator of several food businesses. From an early age, I've worked in my father's businesses on the weekends and later to support myself while studying at uni. And like many Melburnians, I'm passionate about the Queen Victoria Market and its future. Besides being a seasonal trader, I'm also a weekly visitor to the market, along with my wife and three children. I'm delighted to see that they seem to enjoy visiting the market as much as I did when I was young, and I hope that they do the same with their children one day. I've been watching the development of the Queen Victoria Market Renewal Project, initially with great excitement, but lately with some frustration, but always with keen interest. I'd like to commend the City of Melbourne and the People's Panel on this proposal and recommend that it be agreed to and actioned promptly. I believe the proposal strikes the right balance between the need to renew the market with 21st century facilities and infrastructure while minimising the disruption to current QVM traders, preserving heritage features of the market, and most importantly, respecting remains buried beneath the site. The Queen Victoria Market Renewal Project has been one of the most widely consulted public projects in my memory. The City of Melbourne and the market have exceeded, in my belief, reasonable expectations in canvassing the views of stakeholders. I believe that the majority appreciate the care and diligence that has been taken in arriving at this proposal, but I also believe that the majority now expects swift and capable action, a capable execution of this well-considered plan. I thank the committee for allowing me to speak tonight. Thanks.
Matthew, thank you very much. That's great. Thank you. And I was going to say thanks for the time as well. You've been excellent to our traders so far. We're now going to hear from Bruce Pham. Is Bruce here? Bruce, thank you. Welcome.
Thank you, Councillor.
Did you come bearing gifts?
Sorry?
Oh, I'm sorry.
My name is Bruce Pham. My business is Bruce Goose Socks. It is a family-owned business that's been in operation for 30 years at the Queen Victoria Market. Our business has evolved over the years to become a leader in the sale of creative and vibrant Bruce Goose branded socks. Our brand, Bruce Goose, is all about supporting local, manufactured in Melbourne and proud to be registered with the Australian Made campaign. My plan for the future at the Queen Victoria Market is to continue to strengthen and differentiate Bruce Goose brand to support local through distinctive signage, merchandising initiatives, and digital marketing strategies as the leader in high-quality Melbourne-made socks that are fun to show, comfortable to wear, and deliver outstanding value. This is what we do, and this is what it's turned us into. All made here. In my opinion, any new proposed plans to serve to reinvigorate the market and improve its appeal to not only the local community, but visitors to Melbourne in general will be of immense benefit to all traders. For that reason, I'm excited to see the proposed plans and look forward to see them completed to secure the long-term prospects for a sustainable, vibrant and prosperous market, enabling to continuously attract and grow numbers of visitors to the market. I also believe that it is important to any reinvestment work will preserve the iconic status of the Queen Victoria Market as the heart and soul of Melbourne and for decades and centuries to come. Thank you.
Bruce, fantastic, and I'm sorry I distracted you. It was the Queen Vic bag that got me excited when I saw that. Thank you very much, and congratulations on your product as well.
Thank you.
It is now for us to invite Gregory Smith to come to present. Thank you. Greg?
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Thank you, councillors. I have no gifts. My name is Greg Smith and I'm a 40-year trader at the Queen Victoria Market and I support the market infrastructure proposal. I'd like to make a few comments, if I may. I note that the current car park will remain in operation until it is no longer required as part of the Munro and Southern Development sites. That will allow us to measure and evaluate car parking as we go. I note that option A can be delivered in stages to minimise disruption to the market, and that's a very attractive feature for traders.
With regard to sheds A and B and H and I, storage will be placed within fruit and vegetable fresh produce traders' stalls and will be designed following consultation with those traders. That aspect of designing with the end user involved is a very positive ingredient in this process. The world is going through a retail revolution with immense change. The changing nature of retailing, the introduction of online shopping, new ways of communication, increasing competition, and new expectations of customer service are all impacting on the viability of our businesses at the QVM. Investing in infrastructure and getting back of house in order is important as we adapt to these challenges. Indeed, it will assist us to maximise the traditional trader-customer relationship and enhance the freshness of our offer. I believe that this proposal is measured, balanced and appropriate, and I ask the committee to approve its delivery. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Greg. I'm now inviting Paul Ansaldo to come to the podium to present. Thank you, Paul.
Good evening, everybody. I won't say any names. Anyway, I was going to read this, but I decided not to. Now, I've been in the market about 33 years. I've got two boys working there. One son's married. He's got three kids, so there might be a third generation. I don't know about the third, but there's two there. Now, Queen Vic Market, I've been following all this development, Doyle, Sally Cat now. One councillor said, the old Queen Vic needs an uplift. Of course, old Queen Vic hasn't had any money spent, I reckon, about 20 to 22 years. It's been neglected. It does need a development. But is everybody, is that the right development for the market? It's an open-air market. Now, what I see here, how's the fruit going to work? It's very far away. How are you going to get the fruits to the top of A and B sheds? It's you know, there's a lot of study. There's nothing to be approved. It's got to be studied right. I think the market does need a development, but is everyone here just want to do a development, a quick development? Take the car park away. Car park, very important. If you saw read the papers, there was an article in the Herald Sun. Everyone trying to put hot food shops in shopping centre, but it doesn't work. People want car parking. Now, we're getting 1,000 car parks. I reckon we need about 1,200 because we're losing another 150 to 200 around the area. So, I'm going to be quick because I'm out. You all want to do this development. It's good. The market does need a development, but study it and do it better because this one here, it's a little bit wrong. Thank you.
Paul, well done. Thank you. Lovely to hear about your family there as well. Appreciate your comments. And I think we'll be picking up on a number of those issues as we get into the debate this evening. So thank you. And we love that. And now our final speaker for this evening is Marshall Waters. Marshall, welcome to the podium.
Thanks, Lord Mayor and councillors. I hope my technology survives. I'm down to a few percent. I'm here to speak in support of the proposal, but I'm really sad to be talking about this compromised current proposal because I would much rather we'd actually have had the original proposal with the major car park under A, B and C sheds. It was the best solution. And it was stopped by unreasonable opposition from within the market, from without the market, and from Heritage Victoria. If everyone had got behind that proposal in the first place, I'm sure Heritage Victoria would have found a way to make it work for them and for us. It was an excellent proposal. So instead of that, we now have a solution that struggles to meet the long-term needs of the market and has a remote car park. I'm in the middle of A Shed. Now I've finished up with parking underneath the new building that's going up at the moment, and then on the far side of the park. If the original proposal had actually gone ahead, we would have had a car park right in the middle of the market, which would have reinvigorated the sheds, the A, B and C sheds, which at the moment are really struggling, and I can't see that changing with the current proposal. The whole process reminds me a bit of Brexit. We've got poor old Joanne Theresa May Wandell keeps trying to come up with a solution and that everyone will accept, and whatever she comes up with is not acceptable to somebody. Time and time again. At least with Brexit, there was a fixed deadline, unlike this, which seems to have gone on for far too long. Let's hope we can all move on now and get this new plan happening. The whole EU is sick of Brexit, and we're sick of the refurbishment that's not actually happening. The consultation started with traders 5 years ago with a one-on-one consultations that only about a third of the traders bothered to attend. Since then, we've had continuous meetings and feedback from plans and more plans. We need to adopt this revised plan that has taken on board the whole of the United Nations of participants to try and reach a consensus. I hope that everyone can support this proposal and realise that the compromises that everybody has made on all sides will allow us to move on. So can we just get this whole thing going so that the real heritage of the market, which is actually the traders and the customers, is actually retained? Because if we delay it much longer, that heritage, which is the most significant part, will be lost. Thank you.
Marshall, thank you. Entertaining as well as 1%. Insightful. Well done. 1%. Well done. All right. Well, thank you very much to our presenters, and also thank you very much to everybody who's made a submission, and there'll be more thank yous to come as this debate gets underway. Thanks, Dean. Councillors, I'm noting at this point the recommendation that's been put up by our executive team, but I am going to move the motion as it appears on the screen. And can we might need to work through it. So let's get it moved, and then we can work through it. Technical issue? Well, I'm proposing to move the motion, but I'm looking for somebody to second the motion, which is why I was looking to you, Deputy Lord Mayor, seconding the motion. Thank you very much. Well done. Thank you for that. So we can see the motion on the screen. It's been moved. It's been seconded. As the mover, I'm going to speak to the motion, and I know that we're going to have a number of speakers this evening because Queen Victoria Market is a beloved place for so many people here tonight and right across Melbourne. It is both as a market and as a precinct that's sitting in our fastest growing neighbourhood absolutely vital. But there are different uses and different meanings for a large number of groups right across our community. And as Marshall foreshadowed, this really has been a process of balancing lots of different uses, needs, the past, the present and the future. Of course, I believe that we all have a common goal, even though we have different uses or a different sense of meaning of the precinct. We all want to preserve the heritage and the authenticity of the market, I believe. We all want a place that is prosperous for those that are involved doing business there. We all want a place where we can have a sense of vibrancy, but importantly, that is a place for locals to come and shop and regularly support as shoppers and then as a place where visitors can come and get a real sense of the local character of Melbourne through this wonderful market, its history, its present and its future. We all know that this time last year, Council was considering the options for renewal, but that renewal was put on hold as a result of a decision by Heritage Victoria. After months of careful consideration of lots of discussion and debate and thoughtful redesign, Council's decision tonight gives us an opportunity to put renewal right back in the centre and back on track. We have honoured through the last 12 months the commitment to make sure that the voices of those directly involved in the market were heard throughout the process. And I thank everyone for their contribution because your input has helped shape the plan that is being considered this evening. We know from speaking to traders, and it was reflected in a number of the presentations this evening and the submissions made, that there's an overwhelming message of let's get started. We have consulted very closely with Heritage Victoria, as Rob pointed out, and just to note that last week we did receive approval to undertake the conservation works on sheds A to D and H to I, just to repeat that because it's fantastic. And as a reflection of the working relationship we have with Heritage Victoria, and I'm sure that that will continue to be constructive over the coming months as we continue to interact with them on the further permits still to be sought. I really want to acknowledge the excellent work and the detail that went into the master plan, a master plan that we have continued to build on. That work that was considered last year has not gone to waste in any way in terms of the detail, the inputs, and the conclusions very much forming the foundation of the way forward. This final redesign actually sits within many of the other projects that sit in that master plan, and I particularly want to acknowledge the work of the executive team in producing that plan, but also all of the efforts of fellow councillors over a long period of time in the efforts to invest in this very important asset. And I thank everybody for hard work, patience and perseverance, which we know is going to be worth it. But I absolutely acknowledge that has been over many years, and I recognise those efforts, so thank you. Option A, in my view, goes a long way to balancing all of those needs and really getting us a good outcome. It helps us preserve heritage and helps preserve the heritage look and feel of the open market, whilst also investing in renewal to really help future-proof the market as we need to for our growing population and as consumer needs and desires change and habits change. Option A, I believe, delivers more amenity and storage for traders and innovative waste and management facilities. It provides a safer, more efficient and sustainable market, and I pick up some of the words from presentations tonight about being a viable and safe workplace for our traders. Option A delivers a market square, which is 1.5 hectares of new open space for the city and the market and the neighbourhood, which is our fastest growing neighbourhood in the city of Melbourne. That space is larger than Federation Square, just to give some perspective, and it will be a venue for activities to complement the colour and movement of Queen Victoria Market and the needs of the community around it. The car parking provides for 500 car parks at Munro, already approved and underway, which has good proximity to the market, and up to 500 car parks on the southern site, which I note is 55 metres further on from from the main car park at the moment, so it doesn't seem a huge amount of space, but I note the comments made tonight in terms of that distance, and I'm sure that in the operations of the market we can find ways to overcome some of those needs of people that want to be closer to the traders in terms of click and collect and other things that happen in shopping centres as the norm these days. Importantly, traders are at the heart of our market and will have our support during renewal. In that regard, we already have an $8 million trader support program in place to ensure that traders are able to get what they need in terms of ongoing advice and support for the viability of their businesses. We've committed $700,000 to help QVM undertake immediate maintenance works, which have started, and there's another $500,000 that's been injected into marketing to help promote the day market in particular. And of course, as this story unfolds, there'll be plenty to talk to people about and create that excitement about supporting, continuing to visit or revisiting the market, depending on the type of shopper they are. Option A, I believe, is a plan that will get renewal back on track within budget, within timeframes, with least disruption to traders, with manageable risks, and preserves our unique market for decades to come. I am very grateful to and absolutely commend the efforts and dedication of our council team, of everybody involved in the People's Panel, of our traders in particular, councillors and everybody that's been involved in the process over the past few months to take us from that critical point in March last year, as disappointing as it was, to this point where we have a viable option to be able to move forward. I acknowledge absolutely that there is still work ahead, that where we find ourselves tonight is about providing a direction and a confidence about where we are going. It provides a momentum for our beloved market, but I note that there is still work to be done. And I go to Paul's comments about more detailed consideration of the direction within Option A, and that's the sort of work that will be undertaken, and we're looking forward to that. So with all of those opening remarks, just to look at the motion that has been put up for consideration and proposed this evening, it is noting the status of the analysis of the People's Panel report in relation to the provision of market infrastructure and the investigation of various aspects of the minority report, and how we can pull all of those interests together into a balanced plan and a business case, and expecting that business case and implementation strategy. We're endorsing under this motion option A for the provision of that market infrastructure, but we're also requesting management to undertake more detailed work, and I'm going to defer to the Deputy Lord Mayor and his remarks to take us through the detail there. We're noting the approved budget in the business case allows for point of sale storage, but that after consultation with traders, we'll be coming back to actually understand what does that mean and what does that look like and how does it impact that open market authenticity. We are noting, thank you team, the other projects identified in the master plan are progressing and they're listed there, and we are requesting management to make sure that they continue as they have done in an independent Baptigable way, I think Theresa May says that better than I do, consultation with stakeholders and make sure that we respond appropriately, all with a view to bringing that work back in August for council consideration. So for all of those reasons, in relation to the benefits that Option A can bring to the market, with a sense of that was reflected in many of the speakers tonight in terms of being able to get underway with our major parts of the market, with an acknowledgement that there's more work to do. And I just wanted to note as well some of the comments about tenure strategy, which really can come out of our operations once we have some confidence about what we're actually investing in at the market. We'll be able to start really dealing with all of those issues. For all of those reasons, I'm happy to propose this motion this evening. I'm going to call on the Deputy Lord Mayor as the seconder of the motion to comment.
Thanks, Lord Mayor. I was contemplating just saying what Marshall said because you've summed up Marshall so well about how I feel, about how I'm sure many of my fellow councillors feel after what is, you know, bordering on now 7 years of work to get Queen Victoria Market across the line. And in some ways, you know, when we talk about compromise, that is where we are tonight, and we're here because of a decision from Heritage Victoria, and at the time we could have appealed or taken legal action and gone to court, and we chose not to do that. We actually chose to submit a new application. I still firmly believe that we could have prosecuted that case, but we went through a people's panel process, and the recommendations that came out of that, many of them have been picked up. Sadly, it means that the original large floor plate basement proposal is no more. And I think we need to acknowledge that and pick up some of those key points. And that's what 10.2 does for me. So that idea of the original large floor plate beneath the market solved entirely the OH&S issues, which we know are there. It solved the issues with freight and logistics. It solved the issues with storage. It solved the issues with waste management. It removed that conflict with pedestrians at any time of the day. So it really was quite an amazing option, which went through years and years of technical reports and independent studies and various business cases. So there is still quite a bit of sadness around the fact that we couldn't realise that option. Paul, I think you rightly said, how will this work? And that's really what 10.2 is all about. So yes, we're endorsing option A, but we recognise there's a heck of a lot of work that needs to happen. We need to look at logistics, OH&S, legal requirements, the state agreement implications, C308 planning requirements, where, you know, you're supposed to have your basement levels below ground for any new development, such as the southern site. What are the operational implications? Because we still will then have some vehicle movements in and around the market that we were hoping to eliminate with that basement proposal. And then how does that all stack up in terms of budget once we see really what's below Queen Street and what sort of things we're going to be faced with? So I think for me, number one consideration, and these aren't in any order, but number one off the rank is cost. So we've spent, as Leah identified, $20 million of ratepayer money, and $287 million is still a very large sum of money. You know, you're talking 70 new sports pavilions, you're talking lots of new childcare places, or close to 3 years of our entire capital works budget. So we're right as councillors, as management, as traders, as stakeholders, to be asking a heck of a lot of questions when we're talking about spending that kind of money. Safety. So critically, we need to know that this is going to solve as many of those OH&S issues as possible. For me, and I know for my fellow councillors who put their hands in the air so many times to support the master plan that we still have before us, that alignment with the intent of the original master plan to ensure the long-term sustainability of the market, the ability to deliver the long-term sustainability of the market. And I think that's critical because in the original proposal we had much greater net lettable area, and we'll see some of that taken up by point-of-sale storage. So we need to understand the sort of impact that will have on the market long-term as well. And then it's about what traders wanted. So Leah touched on the point around moving the car park into the southern site, and what we need to recognise is that each of these pivots that we're making on a six-year process has a whole new suite of things to consider in that pivot, so we just need to be aware of that. I mentioned cost and budget, the ability to deliver, and C308 and its implications for the southern development site, to me, are really critical in terms of balancing the budget for this project, because if we adhere to our own planning scheme amendment, that parking goes underground, and we're looking at a cost then circa $30 million as opposed to sort of $15 to $18 million, and that does change how this all stacks up. So those are things that we need to work through as well. The business case highlights a few of those issues. So this is quoting directly from the business case. Effective operations within this arrangement, and meaning this option, would require early transition to technology-based logistics. It requires significant changes in logistics and storage operations due to delivery times being limited to outside of trading hours. It removes the business-to-business trading ability below ground. So again, I just come back to the fact that you don't just pivot on 6 years of well-thought-through master plan without implications. I'm not saying these aren't manageable, and that's why I put my hand in the air to support this this new way forward. The changes aren't without risk either. So option A is proposed to include three levels of basement under G shed. In the original proposal, we were looking at one level. So again, less excavation under H&I, well and truly, but more excavation under G shed could present issues as well. The large Victorian Visitor Centre was going to be delivered in Queen Street as a standalone visitor centre. That will be now delivered in combination with market infrastructure as well. So again, impacts with a new way forward. But I guess if anyone thinks that the questions that I and my fellow councillors have been asking at every turn on this in any way show that we're not supportive of a way forward, then I think you're missing the passion and the commitment that the councillors, that many of you here in the room tonight have had to seeing the sustainability of the market. And that, to me, is absolutely what we need to be focused on. And so, Marshall, your point about compromise is absolutely right tonight, because if we don't see something happen here and we're still talking about this in a year's time, then I sort of hate to think about this much-loved gem, this place that we all have stories about our childhood. And, you know, I'll relay one of mine, coming down in the truck with my next door neighbours in Redcliffs who were Rocky Melon growers, you know, driving down at 3 o'clock in the morning, which, you know, as a teenager is not an hour that you ever should be up at. So we all have different stories about Queen Victoria Market, but it's about how does this great story survive into the future. And that's why I'm happy to support the way forward. I thank Stan and his team for their patience. I thank Joe and Rob for their absolute ongoing commitment to get a result here. And I just hope that we can methodically work through some of the new issues that this option presents and get this project done.
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor. Councillors, are there any other speakers to this motion? Councillor Leppett.
Thank you, Lord Mayor, and can I agree with you both? And I think we're probably going to be looking at a consensus motion here. I certainly hope that's the case. And just as Marshall and others have asked us to do, I really hope that today we're demonstrating that unity, that shared purpose, and going in a particular direction with a collective strength. I'm hoping that this consensus motion is going to well and truly demonstrate that. And to that end, I thank the Lord Mayor and Deputy Lord Mayor for incorporating some of the suggestions that I've made about this. I agree that time is of the essence. It's why I've asked that when we come back in August for the detailed plans around option A, that we also look at an updated master plan, but most importantly, an updated implementation framework. We need to set out the timelines for all of our different components for the Queen Victoria Market renewal, expedite as many of those infrastructure construction proposals as we possibly can within what's reasonable and practical to do, but make it very, very clear to the public where we've landed and where we're going to hit the ground running as soon as that implementation plan is adopted. So it's not just this project, but all 13 infrastructure projects and how that fits into the master plan as a whole. The rationale for that is transparency and speed. Now, as the Lord Mayor and Deputy Lord Mayor have said, and I'm not going to repeat except to add something new here, we did stall last year. Heritage Victoria was the epitome of that, but there was more to it than that. Obviously, very loud opposition from different quarters. It's not two sides on the one proposal. It was a much more complicated issue there. Of course, that's natural when you have a site like Queen Victoria Market with so many people with a deep personal connection to it. But we needed a circuit breaker. The People's Panel, after a Lord Mayoral by-election, was that circuit breaker. I think that it's paid off now because we've been able to come up with an option that I'm hoping will have the consensus of the council and can demonstrate to the community that there is a way forward here. As much as some councillors love the original proposal, I had misgivings about the undershed's construction and supported the early steps with some hesitation, but obviously the master plan is what it is and I support it at the time. But when I was in the Lord Mayor by-election campaign, the Market Square was sacrosanct to me, and I acknowledged that we needed a circuit breaker. That's what we've got here, and I'm hoping that the completely remodeled motion here tonight, which does endorse what management has recommended but does make a few other additions as well, is that consensus position that we can all adopt going forward. As I said, Market Square is sacrosanct. It looks like it might be bigger than it previously was. We're looking at whether we don't need New Franklin Street at all. That is something that's been reported to the People's Panel, and it's referenced indirectly in the report that we're considering tonight. That creates even more space. This isn't just a park. It's not a place for picnics necessarily. Obviously, it's not a duplication of Flagstaff Gardens. This is a multi-purpose space that's going to absolutely enhance and attract people to the market and allow those different market uses to spill out, and completely new uses that complement the functions of the market. This space has the potential to be something that is absolutely wonderful and really, really helps the market go in lots of new and exciting directions. And I think it's a much better way to respect the dead, and I certainly think it's something that we need to do to tackle that awful urban heat island effect. The car park will stay there until it doesn't need to stay there anymore, in accordance with the previous council resolutions, and I know that it's a sticking point for some. The Munro car park is much closer to the produce sections of the market than the existing car park, and some of the existing car park will be a slightly further away. That is true, but the net effect is not deleterious compared to the current situation, and I think that we shouldn't be riding off that new Market Square as a place for picnics. It's not as simple as that. It has the capacity to be something truly wonderful, and of course, whatever that is, will undergo its own consultation processes in future. My one word of hesitation, and again I thank the Lord Mayor and Deputy Lord Mayor for incorporating this into the motion, is that I do think that the stalls are a question that is worthy of public prosecution. We need to bring that back to a council meeting for that reason. Absolutely, the primary consideration here is trader viability, but the current heritage values of the sheds and the market includes those inner shed views across all the different stalls. I know that there's lots of heritage advocacy groups and the National Trust and the Heritage Victoria who are very interested in what we're talking about when we say point of sale, storage and stalls, what that might look like, what the impact on the heritage values of the Queen Victoria market are. I'm sure wherever we land, it will be absolutely beneficial for the traders, but I think that is a decision that is worth being made publicly, and so that's why that tweak in the motion is in there. I'm sure we can come up with a way that meets all of those competing needs. Not to slow it down, but just to make sure that that decision's made properly. Finally, I think that the fruit and veg viability is absolutely key to me. So while we make that decision, we need to make sure that the public can see why we're making the decision to provide more storage on site, so that fruit and vegetable doesn't need to be moved quite as often, what it means to have some refrigeration, potentially more refrigeration, I should say. There are a few examples of fridges there at the moment, I understand, on site within A and B sheds in particular, and making that decision publicly is really important to me. So I'm hoping for a consensus decision here so that we can demonstrate that we're getting cracking. Thank you, Lord Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Lippert. Councillor Pinder. Councillor Lippert.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Paul Ansaldo, straight from your heart, really resonates with me. Some 4 or 5 years ago when I sat with many traders to encourage them to nominate for the Lord Mayor's commendations, I sat down with them. I actually wrote their applications because a lot of them just didn't have the time, and they were the richest stories that I actually heard. So my heart is with you, and I know exactly where you're coming from. Marshall Waters, couldn't agree with you more. you said exactly what I've been thinking and saying for the last few years as well. And I think according to Matthew Vitale, swift and capable execution of a well-constructed plan is what you need now. And that is what we're here tonight to decide. It is a much-loved asset. It needs our attention. It needs our decisive action. Yes, Stan, it does. And traders want some care and attention. They also want power. They want running water. They want cooling. They want storage, waste. They want all of that. And they deserve to get all of that. And we need to really listen. And we've listened to Stan, I think, now for several months. And I think, Stan, you're probably at the end of your tether, but we're with you. Although my preference was the original business case, option A offers the least disruption to day-to-day market operations during construction. It comes with difficulties, such as one particular thing that I cited at a couple of meetings ago privately, the distance from the stalls to the car park. That is going to be a problem, Paul. We have to look at that, I believe. It is more than 200 metres. It is more than 55 metres more. And I've had that checked out by a very personal engineer who happens to be my husband. So from the car park to the trading floor, it is a distance. But also we've got the extended timeframes and, of course, the potential OH and S risks. That's something that's really close to my heart, being chair of the People City portfolio as well. I constantly think about people and what are the consequences. However, this report offers to us as councillors an opportunity. It offers us an opportunity to press that start button. But first we need to holler for that Marshall, and steady ourselves with a new battery so we can actually go the distance. 7 or 8 years is what's ahead of us. And I think we've got to think smartly and wisely. And according to Councillor Leppert's words, you know, if there's consensus tonight, that's great. And Stan and the board and the people around you, Stan, your management needs us to support you on this.
Thank you, Councillor Pender. Councillor Riley.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Look, when we embarked on this about 7 years ago, I think the one thing that all of us have not lost, and that is the passion to make change at the market. And it has taken time. But I'm going to agree with everything councillors have said tonight, but I am going to quote from George. And George has had 14 years as a fishmonger at the market, and he wrote to us today and he said, "We can never go back to what the market was, but we can move forward. Our customers are changing, and so must we. It's time to move forward, and it's time to put some love back into the Queen Victoria market." And I think he got it right. Thank you, George.
Councillor Riley, thank you. Councillor Francis Killey.
Just 2 points. One's an ask and one's a reflection. In terms of, we've compromised quite a lot, so my ask is to Rob and the team. There's going to be a few little buildings there. We haven't seen the end pictures. Can they be beautiful? You know, can we do something striking and extraordinary and special? Because we're going to build them there anyway, so let's make them iconic. Little and iconic, but, you know, iconic. And my reflection is, I know lots of people don't like the park and they want parking, but you know, my gut instinct is, you know, as a person who does businesses, the park might deliver the future. It might just deliver the thousands of people that make some nights exceptional. And I know there are people that disagree with that, but my gut feel is I think that will be a really important part of why the market will have a life into the future.
Thank you, Councillor Francis Gilley. Councillor Watts.
Thank you. I don't agree with much that I've heard tonight. I don't agree that this option is a lesser design than the one that was rejected. I think it actually has provided us with an opportunity to do something much, much better, and that will satisfy, I hope, the traders, the customers, and certainly those who care about the heritage of our city. It seems to me that we are indebted once again to the enthusiasm of those who turn up time after time. The QVM comes onto the agenda, they submit, they write, they agitate. It's an indication to me that we haven't got it right yet, and we're going to have another go this time, and I'll support this. But the reality is the wariness that I hear is justified. Our market is in jeopardy, and it's to some extent, I think, the fault of the City of Melbourne, not just in relation to the renewal, but the decline that occurred before that, when we quite happily, over many, many years, took funds from, or the payment, I'm not quite sure what phrase you'd use, but millions were extracted without much benefit back to the market. So there are reasons for the decline, and it's not totally to do with the change in the marketplace or the difficulty of this, that and the other around the market. It's the City of Melbourne has to put its hand up to some extent more recently around the renewal, but in years gone by, perhaps just turning a blind eye to what needed to be done. This particular motion says a lot for me. It satisfies me greatly to think of the renewal commencing properly and in a compliant way. It bothers me, though, that so much of the detail still has to emerge, and I share the wariness of the traders who've said so eloquently that they aren't yet satisfied that we can do all that needs to be done. But I'm absolutely certain that there's a commitment in the City of Melbourne to do the best we can around this. And that's why I'm very happy to read in the motion, I think 10.5, that not only is the consultation ongoing, but that it will be responsive. Because it's all very well consulting, but we've got to listen and we've got to reflect the advice that's been given to us. So I'm very pleased to support this. I can't wait for good things to start happening, and I can't wait to be able to listen to traders coming to us one of these fine days and saying, yes, well, you've got it right. We're not unhappy about the parking. We're not unhappy about the trading conditions and such. We have quite a backlog of angst to address, and I think this motion goes some way towards doing that, provided we keep listening. Thank you.
Councillor Watts, thank you. Are there any other speakers to the motion? Councillor Lelou?
I'll be very quick. Look, we hired Stan for a reason, and that was to, you know, to do the job. And I think, you know, he's been constrained by us in terms of way, and that's why we need to give him the power to be... The longer we take this, the longer that the benefit we deliver to the people and to the market. And I think that's something that is very, very critical. Yes, I obviously fought very hard for the car park because I actually said we wanted to, you know, appeal the Heritage Victoria decision because I think, like, I hear you, Marshall, car park is so essential. But we are where we are now. We need to give the QVM, the company, the board, the power to actually go start digging. And if we're here, it's the same thing next year. Seriously, give me a shovel. I'll go and dig myself. So.
Councillor Lelou, thank you. We'll remember that. Noted to the team. Any other speakers to the motion this evening? Well, before we put the motion to the vote, I think one of the strongest themes we've heard really is a sense of being grateful and to say thank you to the efforts of everyone who has persevered in us searching for a way forward for this fantastic and vital asset, Queen Victoria Market. To councillors, thanks for your efforts over many years before I was here, that's for sure. To Rob Adams and the council team, to Joe and the renewal team, to Stan and the QVM team, to the traders, to the community, to everyone involved in the People's Panel more recently, to the 7,500 people that contributed in over the last 7 years, is it, Councillor Riley, to this process, to everyone who presented tonight, who made a submission, who's been involved in this incredibly passionate and necessary discussion to get to this point. Thank you. We are going to put this motion to the vote. Councillors, would all those in favour of the motion please raise your hands? That is unanimous. I declare the motion carried.
Yes. You didn't start that.
And I didn't continue it either. I'm on a promise. Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Now, there are no other items of general business. No other items of general business to be considered this evening. Thanks to everyone for your participation, for those who need to go. Councillors, I'm asking you at this point, are there any items of proposed urgent business to be considered this evening? No? Thank you. Then I'm up to public questions, which happens at the start and the end of each meeting. We allocate 15 minutes for public questions. It's not a time for submissions, it's a time for questions. If anybody at this point has a question, could you please raise your hand? No, can't see any raised hands, see lots of raised bodies. So I'll take it that there are no questions from the public. That leaves me to close the meeting this evening. I am wishing to thank... 7:44, thank you. I thought you were pointing to something else. I wish to thank all members of the public, management and staff for their interest and attendance this evening, and we declare the meeting closed at 7:44. Thank you very much. See you next time.